Sometimes it's a small moment that opens us up to larger possibilities. On a recent trip to Portland, my sweetheart and I spent a long afternoon in Powell's, the Rose City's famous bookstore that encompasses an entire city block. And when I say a long afternoon, I'm not exaggerating. We were there for 5 hours. We like books. As we were getting ready to leave, she headed up a flight of stairs to use the restroom, then called down to me, "Hey, there's an entire section up here of Jungian psychology books." Now, since I'm a Jungian psychotherapist, I felt both mystified and a little miffed that I'd somehow missed that section during our 5-hour marathon. But at this point, I was just too tired to care. I'd already meandered through many an aisle, pulled volumes off the shelves, read large portions of those, and I now felt that this journey was over. "No thanks," I called up to her. She tucked her chin to her chest, raised her eyebrows, smiled, peered down at me over her glasses as if to say, "Really?" "Really," I gestured up to her, "I'm done." But she kept looking down at me, her smile and her eyes beckoning. I glared back, then smiled back, then started the long, slow climb up the stairs. While she was in the restroom, I scanned the shelves and found myself pulling down one more book. A book by an author who had impressed me because I had heard him lecture several times. The more I thumbed through this volume, the more deeply I felt drawn into it. I added the book to the stack under my arm, and my sweetheart and I made our way toward the cashier. In the weeks that followed, I made my way through that book and found it to be both life-affirming and life-changing. It was one of those books that named things that I had long thought, but that did so with a clarity I'd not yet achieved and a depth I had not yet imagined. Yes, this author is on the same page as me, but he is taking me much, much further. As I think back to how tired, how done I felt as I stood there at the bottom of the stairs in Powell's, I realized I was in good company. We all feel that way from time to time. Jung himself was feeling tired at a turning point in his own life, a point that proved pivotal in the development of what would become depth psychology. In a moment recounted in the Red Book, which was essentially Jung's journal during this time, he uses a process called active imagination to complain to his soul. He said, "I am tired. Why do you not let me sleep?" His soul replies, "Now is no time to sleep. The great work begins. Everything is waiting for you. Now is no time to sleep. The great work begins. Everything is waiting for you." These words are hauntingly as appropriate, as timely, and as compelling today as they were when Jung wrote them nearly half a century ago. Like Jung, I pushed beyond my weariness that afternoon in Powell's, beyond my resistance to one more thing, and I kept moving forward, allowing for the possibility that, in spite of my fatigue, the journey was not over, that there was still something ahead for me, left me feeling opened. And in that opening, I found exactly what I'd been looking for all afternoon in Powell's. Will that prove to be a key moment in my own small part of the great work, the work to which I and you and each of us are called to contribute? I imagine that depends on each of us staying open, on paying attention and persisting and then responding with authenticity, creativity, vitality, and hope. The beckoning that calls us onward in our journey can come from anywhere. The eyes of a loved one smiling down at the top of a staircase. A radio interview we hear in the car. A painting, photo, seen from a movie, a line in a song or a poem, something we read in the paper or online, something we witness on the street. That beckoning can also come in the middle of the night, in our dreams, in those symbolic, sometimes cryptic messages from our deepest selves. Dreams can be so confounding, so disturbing, so challenging that we are tempted to ignore them, to forget to write them down, or just to write them off as meaningless or boring or just about something that happened to me today. So we dismiss them, minimize them, allow them to fade from consciousness in the morning light. But dreams are, as Freud famously observed, the royal road to the unconscious. They are one of the best channels through which we can connect to our deepest, best selves, to the voice of spirit within us. I've been asked to mention here, and as they did in the announcements, that I'll be teaching a 4-week class on Wednesday nights here at Unity in March, titled Understanding Your Dreams, Moving from Insight to Guidance to Growth, and you can sign up at the program table after the service. But whatever form the beckoning takes, dreams, the eyes of a loved one, radio, etc., such moments are often subtle. The signs barely perceptible, even though so much can hang in the balance. The art of living, the heart of Jungian psychotherapy that I practice, is in learning how to pay attention, how to see the signs, how to reflect deeply, discern the meaning of things, and then how to go out into the world and live from that meaningful place. For me, that meant seeing a sign in the beckoning eyes of a loved one, discerning there the possibilities that lay just up the stairs, and then taking those next steps. Those next steps can present themselves as something small, a trip to the bathroom in a bookstore, but they often point us to the importance of living large. What do I mean by that? In the movie The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, young Sonny Kapoor is trying to save the rundown hotel that he dreams will become a place of larger possibilities for himself and for others. His widowed mother has buried her dreams and her pain beneath an adherence to tradition and pragmatism. She's living small. In a poignant scene, she arrives in town, declares Sonny's efforts a failure, and starts arranging to sell the hotel out from under him. She tells him, "Just say goodbye to all this and come back to Delhi with me. Your life will be much easier." "No," Sonny replies, "not easier, smaller." This dialogue between Sonny and his mother is one I see going on every day inside the psyches of my clients, because there is a part of each of us that has become worn down and frightened, made narrow contracted, small by the painful, wounding experiences that life has brought our way. This part of us longs for something much easier and tries to get us to come back to Delhi, that is, to seek some place or person or ideology that holds out the possibility of safety and security, of protection from further pain. As long as that part of us prevails, as long as we remain small and scared, the irony is our pain tends to be repeated, replicated, replayed, and mirrored in the events of our outer lives. It also tends to be reflected back to us in the imagery of our dreams. Those dreams often shed light on the particular ways we remain trapped, but they also show us the way through. There is in each of us another part, a sunny part, a part that knows we are called to step through our fears into a larger life. The book that I pulled from the shelf at the very end of that long afternoon in Powell's was by a Jungian analyst named James Hollis. The book's titled What Matters Most, and in that book Hollis writes this: all of us have to ask this simple but piercing question of our relationships, our affiliations, our professions, our politics, and our theology. Does this path, this choice, make me larger or smaller? Does this path, this choice, make me larger or smaller? So much of what passes for leadership these days in politics, in business, even in spirituality and therapy is about becoming smaller, about who or what we can exclude, about how we can contract, about who or what we're supposed to fear, rather than about the larger, more inclusive, more dangerously creative life to which we are called. The larger life that Hollis refers to, and that Sonny was striving for, it's not necessarily about doing things on a grand scale, not about becoming rich and famous, or even doing things that are best or exotic. It's about tuning into the reality that the psyche, that's the Greek word for soul, the psyche is continually calling each of us to evolve, to mature, to deepen, to expand, to, as Hollis puts it, risk being who we really are. This is a never-ending process. Life is a school with an infinite number of grades. It's a process that is like that of trees that keep growing their entire life until they die. As long as they're alive, they're adding another ring for each cycle of growth. Unlike trees, however, our growth is not simply up or out. It is also, even primarily, within. When we take that journey within, when we take the risk to be who we really are, we discover challenges and possibilities that are uniquely our own. And once we step into both of those, the challenges and the possibilities are inextricably intertwined, things change. Hollis puts it this way: when we spin out our journey from our own deepest places, we find a continuity of intention, a steady feeling of support that allows us to cross over the abyss of our existential angst. What a great phrase. The abyss of our existential angst. Hollis here is echoing these famous words you may already know. The moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that otherwise never would have occurred. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Now, every psychological or spiritual or metaphysical tradition, be that Jungian psychotherapy or the teachings of unity, is at its best about learning to access the steady feeling of support that Hollis wrote about. The sense that we are being led, not by something outside of us, but by something that is both inside of us and at the same time larger than us. The everyday struggles that we face, relationship issues, stress, depression, grief and loss, struggles at work or with our families, loneliness, these are not just problems to be solved. They are doorways. They are invitations to cross the abyss of our existential angst. They are invitations to employ our freedom and our consciousness to do more than just relieve symptoms, more than just take the edge off, more than just get by. Each of these so-called problems are invitations to a larger, more authentic life, a life of depth and meaning. And that life is not just about our individual journeys, is it? It has the potential to help transform the wider world around us. It is here that the larger opens out into the larger still. It is here that we see what Jung meant when he said, when we heal the individual, we heal the collective. Hollis puts it this way: every day that we can call out those demons of fear and reductionism and step into the larger journey intended by the soul, we actually serve the world better by bringing to it the unique gift that each one of us represents. That's what I was doing that afternoon in Powell's. That's what Sonny was doing in the best exotic Marigold Hotel. That's what my clients are doing in each and every session I'm privileged to share with them. This morning, that is what I invite you to do, us to do, to go within, to risk, and to take the next steps toward living larger.